This is a recording of the audit hearing held by the Federal Election Commission on February 8, 2018. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Everybody, today we convene. We're here to convene the February 8th, 2018 audit hearing for McSally for Congress. Representing the committee today is Mr. Jim Terrell of Clark Hill. Welcome back, Jim. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Is this your first audit hearing?
It is, yes.
Cool. Welcome. And Mr. Chris Marston of Election CFO. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing? We will start. You're already at the hearing table. Thank you. With a brief opening statement from whoever is ready to go.
Sure. Well, thank you, Chairman Hunter, Vice Chair Weintraub, members of the commission. As you said, my name is Jim Terrell with the law firm of Clark Hill. I'm here today on behalf of McSally for Congress with respect to the commission's audit of the reports for the 2014 election cycle. Again, as you said, here with me today is Chris Marston, who is the founder of Election CFO, one of the premier FEC compliance firms in the country. Chris is here to speak a little bit about the work that he did for the committee in 2015 and for quite a bit of time after that. We appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today, really to address some disagreements we have with respect to findings 1 and 2 in the draft final audit report. I'll also note that it's an honor to be here today for what is the last hurrah for Commissioner Goodman. I'm sure you're very sad to be leaving, have your last audit hearing today. But
it's hard to call an audit hearing a hurrah.
Yes, it is. But I think I speak for a lot of people in saying thank you for your service to the commission and the country. So before I get to sort of the substantive disagreements that we have with findings 1 and 2, I just wanted to thank the audit division. This wasn't always my, you know, this was a matter that I kind of came on to a little bit later in the process. My former colleague, Beth Beecham White, who many of you know, who's gone on to work in the administration, handled a lot of this before I kind of took it over. But she only had good things to say about the process and the audit division in general, specifically Susanna Patius, Sherilyn Thomas, and Erica Lee with respect to kind of getting everything together for this hearing. So thank you. And everything has been very professional and courteous, and we really do appreciate it. So before, again, I get into the sort of the substantive disagreements with respect to findings 1 and 2, I think it's important to emphasize the sort of Herculean efforts the committee undertook to take a good look at its reports for this particular cycle, but also before that. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons that Chris is here today, because he was engaged by the committee to essentially rebuild the database. And so I think, you know, I'll give Chris just a couple minutes to talk about exactly what he did, not just for the audited period, but since the committee's inception in 2012. So.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Chris Marston. Election CFO is my firm. My colleague Brenda Hankins and I together have about 15 years of experience doing authorized and unauthorized committees, presidential, Senate, House. I guess the fact that I haven't been to an audit hearing before is probably good news. But McSally for Congress retained us to perform an internal review of their reports. Congressman McSally was very concerned that the reports be completely accurate and that all compliance issues, and in particular any requests for additional information from the commission, be thoroughly addressed. In order to do that, we started from the inception of the committee in February 2012, and the time period that our review ended was December 31, 2014. Just a little bit into the 2016 cycle, but at the year end. Over the course of that time, there was $12.3 million in activity, 35,000 contributors making 84,000 contributions. The committee had 5 bank accounts at 3 different banks, and 8 online and credit card contribution processing systems that were all involved in the campaign. In order to ensure that we got everything right, we rebuilt the database. The campaign had used Aristotle 360. We continued to use that, but we actually started from scratch. We moved the existing data over to an alternate database and built the committee rebuilt the database from scratch to ensure that we got everything right. We proceeded one report at a time, reconciling to the bank statements after each report to ensure that we got it right. We reviewed all of the requests for additional information that had come from the commission over that period of time to ensure they were all accurately addressed. And we, of course, identified other issues that we thought might be of concern that we were sure to address. As the audit division noted, we got through a whole lot. We did wind up with some disagreements about some reporting as it relates to the 2014 election cycle. But by and large, with $12.3 million of activity and a number of other statistics I won't bore you with because they're all in your audit report. We feel pretty good about the work that we did. It was about 3 years worth of activity that we reviewed. We did that over the course of 2 months at the end of 2015, ultimately filing our amended reports in early 2016. So it has been 2 years since we completed that activity, so my recollection is not perfect of everything that went on, but I will do my best to answer any questions the commission has. With respect to the disagreements on the misstatement of financial activity, I'll let Jim address those, but I'm certainly prepared to answer any questions you might have with regards to those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Is this microphone working?
Just speak.
Okay. Great. So thank you, Chris. So I just want to get a bit into the sort of the substance of the disagreements, and then happy to answer any kind of questions the commission or the audit division might have. So first off, I think it's important to note that all of the transactions here, despite the issue is really some hyper-technical reporting issues, but the reality is that all of the transactions have been fully disclosed and the public record has been informed of everything that's happened after Chris's Herculean effort to do all of his work. So, as I said, this really kind of boils down to some hyper-technical reporting issues. The draft final audit report correctly noted that the 2013 and 14 cash on hand was materially corrected as a result of our efforts. But the audit division still maintains that the 2014 receipts remain overstated by $94,528. And the 2014 disbursements remain overstated by $85,472. So we really disagree with these figures for three reasons. First, and just a little bit of background, the auditors, we believe they've included some transactions in the alleged overstatement totals that don't appear on the audit reports. So at the exit conference, the audit staff provided spreadsheets. They're right here, if you have any interest. Spreadsheets of receipts and disbursements they believe accounted for the overstatements. We spent weeks sifting through these the spreadsheets, cross-referencing them with the audited reports, and we still couldn't really figure out where they got their numbers. For instance, for the receipts, the spreadsheet listed 122 receipts they believed made up the overstatement of $94,528. The committee conducted its own review of the receipts, and of the 122 transactions, at least, and this, we've done this counting a number of different times, at least 33 of the transactions totaling slightly above $27,000 do not even appear on the amended reports. And I have a list of these here as well, which we provided to the audit division. It's interesting, though, because the draft final audit report actually states in footnote 4 that the committee, quote, correctly removed 33 receipt transactions totaling $27,115, but it doesn't seem like they accounted or subtracted that amount from the alleged misstatement that they came up with originally of $94,528. So on the disbursement side, the committee reviewed the spreadsheet that the audit division provided at the exit conference, which they believed made up the overstatement, and at least 23 of the transactions, totaling approximately $16,908, were not disclosed on the committee's amended reports. And so sort of our first point of contention is we just don't know why we're sort of a bit, you know, we just don't know why the number is what it is after reviewing the audit reports numerous times. And so it just cannot equal $94,528 for the alleged overstatement of receipts and alleged overstatement of $85,472 for the disbursements. The second issue, the point of contention we have, is that $21,100 of the transactions that make up the alleged overstatements, they were accurately reported on our amended reports as contributions and refunds. They actually were contributions and refunds. The committee reported $21,100 in contributions that were later refunded to the contributors. The auditor's position is that the number of contributions were not, quote, received by the committee, and that the committee did not actually issue the refunds. I mean, I have a list here, but it's all information we provided to the audit division already. Receipts and disperse or contributions and refunds, they contend that these were so-called chargebacks, and they should have been reported as negative entries on Schedule A, rather than as refunds on Schedule B. But we have, you know, proof that this individual named Sheldon Schuessler, Wayne Williams, and Carol Thompson requested refunds from the committee, and they were not bounce checks or the electronic equivalent of bounce checks. And so the committee believes that these contributions and refunds totaling $15,500 were properly reported as receipts and disbursements. Now, the remaining $5,600 of that $21,100 constitutes funds that actually came into the committee's accounts. And we believe that under the regulations, the committee is required to show that as a receipt on Schedule A. And that's what we did. The campaign guide, which has been referenced a number of different times in various documents, it states that a committee should report a transaction as a negative entry when, one, a contribution is redesignated or reattributed during a different reporting period, the checks returned due to insufficient funds, the checks are never cashed, and four, investment losses. The reports analysis division has also issued guidance stating that with respect to contributions, quote, negative entries on Schedule A should only be used to disclose returned or bounced contribution checks and not for refunds by the committee. And even if these were not refunds, which we contend that they were, the Office of General Counsel's own memo to the commission dated May 4th with respect to this audit states that the campaign guide, quote, recommends that when a contribution is rejected, a committee reported as a negative entry on Schedule A. It doesn't say anywhere that this is required. In short, the commission just really hasn't provided clear guidance regarding how a committee must report a so-called chargeback. The committee's reporting was, in our opinion, reasonable and reflected what occurred at the time. And so the third point of contention is the committee's reporting of $45,015 in offsets to operating expenditures that we believe is reasonable and not inconsistent with the statute or regulations. The campaign guide provides that uncashed checks written by the committee should be reported as negative entries rather than offsets to operating expenditures. The committee reported uncleared checks as offsets, receipts, in order to ensure the cash on hand was accurate. It didn't at all distort the public record or overstate contributions received by the committee. The detailed summary pages of the reports, they clearly delineate between contributions the committee has received from contributors and other types of receipts, such as interest, loans, refunds, or rebates. The amended reports disclose disbursements totaling $45,015, but because those checks did not clear, those funds were treated as offsets. We believe that this was a reasonable way to do it, to account for the transaction, even if it was not the preferred way. As I said, the OGC said this was a recommended way of doing things. Even with that said, even if the commission concluded that the $45,000 in offsets should have been reported differently, which we don't think it should have been, in light of the vast amount of money that was raised and spent during this period, it shouldn't really be material. And frankly, with respect to the offsets, many of the checks actually did clear and were refunded as offsets. The audit division seems to think that the remaining, this 45,000, they were all just, all didn't clear and they weren't refunded, and that they were just, they shouldn't have been reported as offsets. They're basically saying that none of the 45,000 actually cleared. And so, you know, even assuming that, let's say half, which I think is generous, did not clear, you're down to about $20,000 or so that were reported as offsets in a universe of $9,264,036 in activity for the period. I mean, that's 0.2 of 1% of activity, which we believe is just not material in this context. And so with respect to finding one, you know, I think that, you know, initially the initial reports, the audited reports, there was a misstatement. But to say in the draft final audit report that the audit staff maintains that 2014 receipts and disbursements remain overstated by 94,528 and 85,472 respectively, for these three reasons, we just don't believe can possibly be accurate. And so that's what we basically our sort of conclusions with respect to finding one, and I'll just briefly touch on our issue with finding two. Finding two the audit division stated that the best efforts matter is resolved, and that's fine, but we don't believe it should have been a finding in the first place. We have provided specifically, actually, we dispute the draft final audit report statement that, quote, since the committee's corrective action occurred after audit notification, the matter is included in this audit report, end quote. It appears that the auditor seemed to be sort of misconstruing the best efforts requirements here. We've exhibited best efforts by providing countless documents to the auditors, solicitation materials, emails between the finance team, previous treasurers saying that these letters went out. All the solicitation materials had the request for occupation employer for over $200. The committee always, the treasurer and the former finance team always followed up from the very beginning, since 2012, from the very beginning, that requesting this information at least once. And so it's true that during the audited period and after we were notified of the audit that we started including more information about occupation and employer, but that's after the second and third go-around. And so the best efforts requirement requires that all the solicitation materials have that language, but also that you follow up within 30 days verbally or written to get that information, and that's exactly what the committee did. The fact that they didn't get that after so many, after sending these letters out and sending the correspondence out shouldn't have any bearing on the best efforts. I mean, they exhibited best efforts right from the very beginning, and that's why we don't believe this should be a finding in the first place. I mean, Congresswoman McSally does a lot of direct mail fundraising, getting small dollars. And so, oftentimes people will not include that information. That they'll donate multiple times but not include the information, the occupation and employer, because, you know, sometimes they just don't include it because they're giving small amounts each time and they may not think that they have to. But when we found out that when those contributions eventually aggregated to above $200, and even before then, all the solicitation materials requested occupation employer, and we followed up with the donors. And so, you know, I appreciate that, you know, that they're noting that we took corrective action. Corrective action in that sense is, yes, we found out more information about our donors and included on the amended reports. But that's not what the best efforts requirement is asking for here. And so we believe that finding two shouldn't be a finding at all. And I think Chris can actually speak to sort of, it's become a bit of a practice almost where, you can speak to this, where the reports analysis division, if you have a report filled with info requested, so on and so forth for many, many pages of a report, it's almost automatic that you're going to get a request for additional information, regardless of whether they exhibited best efforts in the first place. And so I think, Chris, you can speak to that a bit.
For several clients, particularly those that engage in direct mail fundraising in the way that Congressman McSally's campaign did, it's frequent to get an RFAI from the Reports Analysis Division noting the need to comply with the best efforts provisions and to report that information where available, to the point where, for some of them, the request would come after every report. So in talking to several different analysts about it, they recommended that at the beginning of each election cycle or each year for unauthorized committees, that we simply document what our best efforts process is, which honestly is essentially repeating exactly what the text of the RFAI asks us to say, to put that in the report at the beginning of each cycle to avoid getting those RFAIs. I've taken to doing that for a number of clients, and it has cut down the number of RFAIs. It doesn't materially change the public record or exactly what the committee has engaged in terms of complying with best efforts. It simply documents it one more time. So instead of just saying info requested per best efforts wherever the information is missing, we now do that as well as putting a disclaimer on a Form 99 or memo text on an early report saying, when we say info requested per best efforts, we mean that we follow the commission regulation, which we now repeat here in full. I'm not sure that that has made the world a better place or informed the public more. If it has, I'm glad that we're doing it, but I don't think that it's material to whether or not a committee has complied with the best efforts requirements.
Thank you. And just I'll add just a couple more points. It seems as though because of this, the finding in the best efforts finding and finding two, it seems as though the burden is kind of being shifted a bit for us to prove that all of our materials and all of our follow-up, trying to produce that all to prove that we exhibited best efforts. As I said, we produced numerous documentation, emails. The former treasurer attested to the fact that this is the procedures that they had in place to get occupation employer. And it just seems as though the burden's being a little bit shifted to show that we did it, as opposed to them having proof that we did not. And then I'll also note, which is, kind of goes to the best to finding too as well, is that there was complaint on this exact issue that was filed in 2015, which covered 2015 reports, but also covered 2014 reports, and it's MER 6953. And that was dismissed 5-0, and so it seems sort of counterintuitive to think that something like that could be resoundingly dismissed with the same allegations, and then having that be a finding, and saying that it's mentioned in the audit because corrective action was taken after the audit commenced. So. With that said, I we're happy to answer any questions you might have. Those primarily are the three issues with respect to finding one, and then what we just discussed with finding two.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? Comments?
I have one question.
Commissioner Goodman.
Yes, Chris. Your math doesn't add up with our auditor's math. Is that?
On the issue of receipts and disbursements, our cash on hand numbers match.
Have you been able to identify precisely where they don't meet up?
Not to the penny. We have found a number of
What's
cases.
What's the delta?
I think Jim cited it. It's I think we were down to in the 40,000s on both sides.
40,000s. I guess I'd ask our audit staff. Is there at least agreement on the delta? I mean, have you looked at his numbers and tried to see where we disagree?
Absolutely, Commissioner Goodman. We have looked at the amended reports that committee filed at the beginning of 2016 mm-hmm. and the totals there, and we compared them to the bank figures. And the vast majority of the delta on both sides, receipt and disbursements, was due to the fact the committee reported the void transactions and the corresponding non-existent vendor refunds, And the second major group was the chargeback that the council mentioned a second ago. Those were the two largest groups when we disagree. Everything else is small, and we did not really even mention in the report per se. We addressed those two groups of transactions.
And they account for how much?
The voided disbursements that ended up being reported, a total of $45,000, and the chargebacks, a total $21,100. So those two groups combined, they attributed to the misstatement on the receipts and disbursement side, even though, as we mentioned several times, we do agree with the cash on hand, as per the amended reports on 2014.
Okay. So we have a reporting problem or a mathematical difference of opinion?
I believe there's a little bit of both.
Okay.
The reporting problem, as the audit staff has noted, amounts to about $45,000 on disbursements and $21,000 on receipts in terms of our disagreement about how to do the reporting. But the numbers that they're citing for the misstatement in the draft final audit report are, as you know, much larger than that. They're 95 and 85. It's the difference between those two that we're concerned about still being listed as a misstatement, because we don't think there is a misstatement. We've identified and acknowledged in footnotes at least $21,000, for example, on the receipt side, where we actually did receive it. We've shown them we received it. We did refunds, but they've still left the large numbers in as what they think the misstatement is.
Zen, do you have a response to that?
I do. As a matter of every audit, we look at the committee's reported activity and compare it to what went through the bank. We don't get very creative there. If we see transactions that are being reported and not clearing bank, either way, as a receipt or disbursement, we note it. In this particular case, the largest group, the voided disbursements, did not go through the bank. Bank knows nothing about them. And in order for the committee to correct the ending cash, the committee reported non-existent vendor refunds, which did cause the ending cash to zero out. We agree with that. However, inadvertently, we're inflating both sides of receipts and disbursements. That's our contention. It's all about what goes through the bank. We understand what the committee is doing, mm-hmm. math-wise, but the bank disagrees.
If I may, so I appreciate that, and I think that's where we have the fundamental disagreement as to how they should be reported. I think what we're talking about now, though, is just figuring out whose numbers are right and wrong with respect to what was on the amended reports. And I think that, as Chris said, the spreadsheet that we were given at the exit conference listed 122 receipts that the audit division believed made up the overstatement of $94,528. But after the committee reviewed the spreadsheet multiple times, at least 33 of those transactions aren't even on the amended reports. They're not even on there. And we you know, there's a list right here of names and contributions that were on the spreadsheet that we were provided at the exit conference, but that were never, they're just not there on the amended reports. And so I think that we were sort of miffed by how is that amount still included in to add up to $94,528 when, at least on the receipt side, 33 transactions totaling $27,115 aren't even there. And then on the disbursement side, 33 transactions totaling $27,115 are not there. And so I think that, you know, we can have the disagreement about the reporting of chargebacks and offsets to operating expenditures. We believe we're right and it was reasonable, but even before that, I think it's important to note that the numbers are just not there. They're not in the amended reports. And we provided this sheet, and my former colleague Beth provided this fancy highlighted spreadsheet noting where the disagreements were with respect to what was on there. Exit conference spreadsheets and what was on the actual amended reports, and as I said, they just weren't there.
So even if you went back and amended your reports to account for these chargebacks in the way that you're being presented would be the proper way to do it, you still have a delta of math on the total transactions. I mean, there's still a difference
that's
of
correct.
Opinion on the total math, right, Zuzana?
That's correct, Commissioner Goodman. We have the chargebacks and the voids. Had the committee correctly reported those two groups, there would be no delta.
There would be no delta.
Right.
So she says if you were to, so that indicates to me that this is merely a reporting issue. Now, you still think there's a delta? Even if you report, because Zuzana says if you went back and accounted for it on our reports, you know, put the square peg into the round hole and put them on the right lines, she says that the mathematical delta goes away.
And just one more note. We auditors, we look for material agreement with the bank. We're not looking for perfection here. We're not looking to the penny. We're looking at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And seeing that is why the little transactions that the council referred to, they wouldn't, at the end of the day, make the difference. Mm-hmm. Had those two groups of transactions that do make up the majority of misstatement were taken care of. That's all we're saying.
Well, I guess I'm hearing that there's not that big a problem after all. I mean, other than the reporting construct.
If the standard is material, then I would absolutely agree. I think there's still a difference in numbers because the total that the audit division has listed as a misstatement of 95 and 85
yes.
Is substantially more than the 45 and 20 that we're talking about on the alleged misreporting. Disagreement. If those numbers aren't material, then I would absolutely agree with the audit division, and I would suggest that perhaps the whole thing is not material, but that would just be me.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Mr. Peterson?
I just have a quick question, I guess, of the auditors. To what extent is this reporting issue? Have we had this issue arrive in the past where there's disagreements between the audited committee and auditors about how to report these chargebacks and you know, the refunds and so forth? And because I I've never had this issue teed up for me in this way, and the way I hear it is that there's a recommended way to report these transactions, but your contention is that recommended method is not grounded in either the statute or the regulations. It may be a recommendation in the campaign guides, but is not otherwise grounded in the regs. Yeah. And that whether or not certain information does hit the bank or doesn't hit the bank isn't necessarily dispositive of whether or not they should be reported as disbursements or negative disbursements or as receipts.
I think you're right, Commissioner, and I think that it in our view it's a more accurate portrayal of what actually happened. And I think that with respect to the reporting, specifically the reporting of contributions and refunds, I'll note that there's a handful of these contributions refunds that these contributors actually requested refunds, hit the account, went into the account, and then they requested refunds, and that's what we did. But the audit division is stating that they still essentially never hit the account, and that they weren't actually refunds.
Okay, I guess I'm just getting confused on that issue. Are there categories of money that did actually hit the account that were then refunded that there is a dispute over?
Commissioner Peterson, I think that might be the area that we've sort of labeled as not material, the difference between the 85 and the 45.
Okay.
that account for those. I would not be at all surprised if it was the case that things that the audit division viewed as chargebacks totaled the 45. I would offer for the commission's consideration that chargeback is an ill-defined term. It is certainly not a commission term. I understand why the commission has used it in its guidance, but there's a substantial difference, in my view, between For example, a person making a credit card charge, they call the credit card company and dispute it the next day, and it's reversed. The money never gets to our merchant service account and never makes it to us. And the situation where a donor notices 4 months later that their credit card was charged 4 months ago and they didn't intend to make that contribution, and they call the campaign, and the campaign calls the merchant service provider and says, please refund this. The merchant service provider gave us the money. Now they're going to take back the money and give it to the donor. Both of those things, in the parlance of the campaign guide, would be considered a chargeback, but I believe they're materially different, and that it's appropriate to report one as a negative entry and the other as a refund. That may be a disagreement between me and an audit or reports analysis or the whole world, but I don't think the commission has promulgated regulations that dictate that there's an answer and a chargeback specifically means this and it shall always be treated this way or that way.
Okay. Appreciate that clarification.
Did you have something to say? Because it sounded like there's still a level of disagreement over what the issue is here, and I'm not sure that we're saying that we have a meeting of the minds.
The group of six contributions that amounted to $21,100, three of them were check contributions that happened to bounce. They were non-sufficient funds checks. The other three were credit card contributions, where in one of the transactions we were able to review the merchant statement and note that it was an accidental donation. We would like to note for the commission that the industry recognizes different types of chargebacks. Chargebacks simply mean return of the money. There could be a technical reason for that. There's the credit card does not have sufficient funds on it. Or there can be a clerical error, such as in these situations. The contributor never meant to give $2,000, only $20, for example. So in the three situations, we have one annotation that the contributor never meant to give so much money. And what happened, within less than 10 days in these three instances, the money was returned via bank, via the debit, back to the contributor. So the committee did not, per se, write any refund. It's been done for them. That's all we're saying.
So is there anything you want them to do to make that become not material anymore?
Madam Chair, what we recommended in our report is that we understand that the committee underwent a lot of revamping of its systems, and not to burden the committee further, we just simply wanted them to disclose Form 99 miscellaneous text and explain these two types of transactions in particular as a matter of public record.
Is that something that you've already tried to do, or?
There's been discussions back and forth about doing a Form 99. I think, in our view, it frankly would just confuse the public record more than anything else. I mean, this happened so long ago.
Right.
The totals are all correct. They're just categorized a little bit differently, and the detail summary page, and the summary page, they're all the same. And so I think that, you know, if we were to file a Form 99 explaining all this, people would not really understand what's going on. This happens just so long ago, and you know, if we're having a discussion about what a chargeback is, and there's disagreement legally, and there's nothing in the regs or the statute about how it should be reported, I don't know what anyone in the public record or in the you know, out there would think about what does this mean, and so I think that. It's our view that it would just cause more confusion than anything else.
Well, Madam Chair, my takeaway is within that realm of the reporting construct and how certain nuanced transactions were reported, the finding would be reduced to a non-significant number. That's my understanding from this colloquy. And anyway, I want to thank you very much for coming in, and I understand this is highly detailed. I understand this committee has incurred a lot of accounting and legal costs to bring their reports current, and so I just want to thank you both gentlemen for bringing this to our attention. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Any other questions or comments? No? OGC? No? Okay. Anything else you would like to say?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've pretty much said everything. We appreciate the opportunity to bring the issues to the forefront, and we appreciate the audit division's diligent work on this. It's been a bit of a task. It's hyper technical, but everyone's been very professional and courteous, and we appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you to all, and thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.